final case of the day is Consolidated Coal Company against Beeler.
Good morning, Your Honors.
We always let both counsel manage to find a seat.
May it please court, my name is Sherilyn Travaya. I'm here on behalf of Consolidation Coal Company. This is a federal black lung claim, which the ALJ decided in a decision awarding benefits in February of 2006 that was appealed to the Benefits Review Board, which affirmed the ALJ's decision in February of 2007. The standard of review with regard to these cases is whether the ALJ's decision was rational, supported by substantial evidence, and contrary to law. It is the position of Consolidation Coal Company that the ALJ's decision in this matter was none of the above. Some of the points of contention that we have placed in our brief all of our points are related to his review of the evidence. Specifically, we noted that there were medical records that were placed into evidence, specifically exhibits 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. None of which were addressed by the ALJ beyond a statement that was one sentence in his brief saying that he looked at them. The reason we found this to be unacceptable and contrary to law is that an ALJ is required to review all of the evidence, and in this case, Mr. Beeler, who worked in the coal mines for 13 years, was not found to have medical pneumoconiosis, but was found to have legal pneumoconiosis, meaning it wasn't seen. The ALJ decided there wasn't enough x-ray evidence to support it. However, he did have an obstructive condition, which fell under the second prong of pneumoconiosis. The medical records that we have referenced specifically stated that his treating physicians came to the conclusion that his obstructive condition or emphysema was related to his long smoking history, and we have referenced those notations in our final brief. The second point of contention was ALJ Purcell's evaluation with regard to the medical expert evidence. And our first contention with this is his decision was contrary to law because he has essentially adopted a presumption that does not exist and, in fact, is inconsistent with the statements from the Federal Register, which specifically state that there is no presumption that a coal miner's obstructive condition is caused by coal mining. There is a burden of proof here, which the claimant is required to establish, which is that his legal pneumoconiosis arose from his coal mine employment. The ALJ in this case decided to rely upon the opinion of Dr. Cohen, which one of our points of contention is that Dr. Cohen's opinion is merely based on probability. And where it's just as likely that a weatherman will say it's going to snow tomorrow, that doesn't necessarily mean that it will. In this case, Mr. Beeler, there's no dispute that he did have...
I don't understand why that's a strike against Cohen's view. All diagnosis is probabilistic.
The difficulty with Dr. Cohen's, his rationale is that even he admitted that there was no objective evidence to support the finding that coal dust exposure actually caused the obstructive condition.
If somebody dies of a heart attack or has a heart attack, that might have been caused by smoking, it might have been caused by diet, it might have been caused by genes, it might have been caused by, or it might be completely random. Right? All the medical profession can do is try to describe the probabilities. Now, Cohen does that. Why is that a strike against his evaluation? There is no certainty in the world. If he said, I'm sure that coal dust contributed, he ought to be dismissed as a quack. Instead, he concedes the probabilistic nature of the judgment. Why does that require it to be disregarded?
Because the regulations in the statute for the Federal Black Lung Act require that a claimant prove that his legal pneumoconiosis arose from his coal mine exposure. And simply listing exposures that someone was exposed to, there's no science involved whatsoever. Essentially, you're taking a man who had a 13-year smoking history, or I'm sorry, a 13-year coal mining history and a 37-year smoking history, and saying, well, I can't decide which one it is, but since he did both, then we're going to say that both of them were contributory. And the position that you have set forward is very similar to the position that ALJ Purcell did. In fact, The other contentions that we had with regard to his review of the evidence was that it was further contrary to law because...
Well, is there scientific evidence? That is, if you go to the medical journals and look at epidemiological studies, how much of a contributing factor is coal dust in circumstances like this? I assume that there's a medical answer.
Actually, Your Honor, it's all over the board. If you look at the research articles, if you read them in depth, depending on whether or not the coal miner also had fibrosis, which would be the medical pneumoconiosis, that would increase the likelihood of the obstructive condition being caused by coal mine dust. When you get down to a miner who has no smoking history whatsoever, who has an obstructive condition, certainly there we're looking at someone with 100%, yes, this is caused by coal dust exposure. When you're dealing with legal pneumoconiosis and obstructive condition only, there is no direct evidence specifically stating this percentage of people are going to have it or this percentage is not. Basically, what the DOL has decided, which no one really disputes, is that it is possible for coal mine dust to cause an obstructive condition. No one has said it's definitely going to happen. No one says this number of people are going to have it. You know, there are studies out there, some that were relied on by Dr. Cohen, you know, that equate it with certain amounts. However, no one has taken the time to say, well, the study that Dr. Cohen's relying on is a bunch of British coal miners. Is their coal mine the same as ours? I mean, the point being is it's their burden.
I don't see why that would be pertinent. I mean, your brief doesn't cite any of these studies. What I would be interested in is the coefficient on the variable. These epidemiological studies are done as very large statistical regressions. And one of the independent variables is years of coal mine work. What is the coefficient on that variable?
I have no idea, Your Honor. In fact, I don't know that anybody out there does, because there's more than just...
This is just how epidemiological studies are done. You run the statistical package, you derive the coefficient on the variable, and then you describe the probabilities for the general reading public.
Well,
but underneath all of these is a regression.
The study that Dr. Cohen relied on most, the Atfield and Hodes study, actually involved miners who worked over 20 years, which certainly Mr. Beeler wasn't even that. So, I mean, basically, you have different things that are looked at. In fact, some of the studies that Dr. Cohen notes, that notes there's a 2 to 3 cc difference per year, that's the same as what you and I would have never being in a coal mine just by getting older. So, I mean, whether his review is the same or not, the point being that the ALJ, you know, basically dinged out Dr. Tudor and Dr. Wren for not rebutting a presumption that doesn't exist is the basis of our brief, and it appears that I've moved into my other time, so unless there's any questions, I'm going to wait for a rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Fogel.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, the decision of the administrative law judge should be affirmed based on the standard of review. The ALJ did his job here. He analyzed whether Mr. Beeler has legal pneumoconiosis or obstructive lung disease from coal mine employment. And it's a classic situation where it came down to looking at three medical opinions, and he was most persuaded by Dr. Cohen, a very outstanding expert in this area, who reasoned that Mr. Beeler does have occupational lung disease caused by both coal dust and smoking. Now, the company had two different opinions from Drs. Tudor and Wren. They are frequent black lung company doctors, but their opinions were poor and unreasoned. First of all, you got Dr. Wren, who only provided an unsupported conclusory remark.
What do we know from the medical literature? Have you looked at what might appear in the New England Journal of Medicine about this subject?
I don't think it's there, Your Honor. There are other places where it appears.
Epidemiological studies of this kind.
Right, and the Department of Labor reviewed all that. They looked at all the science, and this is what they adopted. The medical authority shows that the incident of...
Yeah, and you...
Smokers?
You know, certainly, that when the D.C. Circuit sustained the validity of the regulation, it said one of the important factors was that the regulation was non-dispositive. It left for argument in each case what the epidemiological evidence might show. Now, neither side has made anything of that. It would be interesting to know what it shows.
The epidemiological studies?
Yes.
They show that the rate of getting obstructive lung disease from coal dust in non-smoking minors is equivalent to that of smokers in the general population. And when you have a minor like Mr. Beeler, who is a smoking minor...
So what? Where is that study? Where do you want me to look?
It's in the preamble. It's in the preamble to the regulations, the Federal Register.
Forget it. The Federal Register is not a scientific journal. They might be referring to scientific studies. I was hoping that one or the other of you might know where the scientific studies might be located.
There's a whole lot of them, Your Honor, and they are cited in there. And this particular one is Marin. Affield Holdis is another one. I don't have the citations off the top of my head, but it's easier for me to refer to the Federal Register, which lists them all. And Dr. Cullen lists them all in his report,
I'm sure
too.
Didn't list them all.
And Dr. Cullen lists more current studies in his report that follow what the Department of Labor reviewed. And back to Dr. Wren, he just gave a conclusory remark. Okay, so that an ALJ can easily discount that type of an opinion. Dr. Tudor offered nothing more than his subjective personal review, which was also unsupported. He says that minors who don't smoke get black lung disease or get obstructive lung disease from coal dust less frequently than do smokers in the general population. And the Department of Labor has shown all the epidemiological studies that show that. That's just not true. It's equal for those two groups. But it's greater. The risk is much greater for smoking minors. And Dr. Tudor never talked about the smoking minor, which is what Mr. Beeler is. So the ALJ got it right. And as far as Dr. Cullen's analysis goes, if you look at his medical opinion, he does discuss Mr. Beeler's case in particular. He relates the science to Mr. Beeler's situation. He says the COPD is related to the coal dust based on the symptoms of coughing, wheezing, and shortness of breath. That's all consistent with legal pneumoconiosis.
Let me ask you this. Most of these black lung cases that I've seen are ones where someone has worked in the mines their whole career. This fella has 13 years in the mines. For 35 years, he was a pack a day smoker. Is this an unusual amount of time to work in the mines to have a claim like this? I really don't know. But I generally think most of the cases I've seen are people who have been 30 years in the mines. And
well, you know,
that.
I've had over 500 minor clients, and most of them have around 20. That's where they fall. Then there's a group that has more than
it's
that.
It's terribly hard work.
It sure is.
12 hours a day
and most of those miners don't have a lot of overtime either. Now, in Mr. Beeler's case, he worked more than 13 calendar years. If you look at it, that is 13 calendar years, but he was working 12-hour days, and he worked up to 7 days a week. And most of the miners just do their 8 hours, and they have a little bit of overtime. He consistently worked much more, and that brings him up into the 20s, the 20, 25, 26. These studies that have been done on the coal miners assumes an 8-hour workday. And if we're going to talk about a pack of your history and we look at how much you're smoking per day, well, you know, that same principle should apply when you're looking at the coal mine dust factor. What was especially interesting in Mr. Beeler's case is that his pulmonary function study showed severely reduced FEV1, FEV1 over the FVC, which are the classic indicators of obstruction. But because of the severity of that, and then you have his reduced diffusion capacity, the hypoxemia from the blood gas studies, Dr. Cohen said that is significant enough that that's coming from more than just smoking when you look at the science. And it was the relationship between the decline, how his lung function declined, and his significant exposure at the face for all this time, that led Dr. Cohen to his opinion. That is more than enough to support the judge's finding. This is, and I just want to remark on one more thing. Today it was argued that the treatment records were ignored. They were not ignored. The specific citations in those treatment records were only provided to in the reply brief for the company. They never presented it to the judge. They never presented it to the board, and the board told them, had you done that, the judge could have looked at that. But you didn't even tell us where he made that mistake. Now, when you look at those treatment records, it's Dr. Prabhu, P-A-R-B-H-U. Dr. Prabhu is just running tests on this guy, and in his impression says, okay, he's got severe obstruction, probably from coal dust. But in this case, Dr. Prabhu was later asked to offer an opinion specifically on whether or not coal dust exposure was a contributing cause, and he said probably it was. And when the ALJ looked at that, he said, well, you know, that's kind of equivocal, and he disregarded that, gave it less weight than the other opinions. So those medical treatment records are not medical opinions, but Dr. Prabhu's opinion is in the record. It's a substantial evidence case. We think the ALJ did what he was supposed to do in this case. You should be satisfied with the results and affirm the ALJ's decision. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Vogel. Anything further, Ms. Intravia?
Just very briefly, Your Honors. With regard to the medical treatment records, it was more than just Dr. Prabhu's records. It included St. Vincent Memorial Hospital, Hillsborough Area Hospital, and St. Francis Hospital. Those are all noted in our brief. With regard to Ms. Vogel's statements regarding 12-hour days and overtime with the coal mines, there's absolutely nothing in the record whatsoever to support that. There is no medical study that she has listed that would further support that. Her comment with regard to Dr. Cohen finding that the obstructive condition was too severe based solely on coal mine, that was not Dr. Cohen, that was Dr. Henkel. His opinion was specifically disproved, and in fact his theory was based on the fact that Mr. Beeler did not smoke enough to have caused it, which he didn't find 37 to 39 years to be significant smoking history. And with regard to the opinions of Dr. Wren and Dr. Tudor, the ALJ specifically disqualified them for a failure to address why 13 years of coal mine dust didn't cause an obstructive condition. The ALJ has basically required the respondents' physicians to prove a presumption that does not exist and which has been stated in the Federal Register to not be a factor in this matter. And for those reasons, the decision is contrary to law. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.